infestation of non-human organisms in the reactor. Lanima, to be precise. Numbers unknown. These bastards more than likely took Charlie Squad offline, so gear up in your enviro suits, and for God's sake, check your seal integrity. Mantis is sending you all a briefing document. 10 minutes, my lovelies.
Cerberus, this is Callie. Roger that. Alpha Squad already inbound.
Copy, Cerberus. Nightingale en route.
Eden en route.
Two-time inbound.
Rapier here. I copy. On my way.
Decided which team you're on, boy?
You've got no worries on that account, sir.
Right. Let's end this.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
Footage opens in the reactor, to the sight of an empty control room and the sound of softly humming machinery. Volk Squad might be en route, but right now the place is empty. It's a big room, at least 20 meters across, ringed by workstations and supply cupboards and huge display screens, as well as one large window, just in case anybody wants to check on the wormhole the old-fashioned way. Hannah Donnelly appears first, sliding down from a vent to land on the metal grill floor without a sound. The off-white envirosuit she's wearing fits her well enough, but from this camera angle the light reflects off her visor, so I can't make out her features. I can tell by the turn of her head that she conducts a quick sweep of the room. Only once she's sure it's empty does she turn to rest her forehead against the wall, exhaustion in every slumped line of her body, arms tucked in against her torso. Nick Malikoff steps out from the shadows, clad in a black envirosuit from the boop. He's torn off all the reflectors that would help search and rescue teams in the event he was floating in space. Here, camouflage is what he needs. His dark hair and matching stubble are visible through the faceplate, along with the top of that angel tattoo. His second footstep makes a soft sound, and Donnelly whips around, gun rising in the same movement, trained on his chest. He simply stops in place and shoots her a smile, showing off those dimples the ladies love. He smiles at her like he's not tired at all, like he's not wearing another man's blood under his suit, like all he wanted in life was to catch a glimpse of her. She lowers her gun slowly, like she has to remember how to do it, and tucks it into her hip pocket, the grip sticking out where she can grab it again in a moment. Her hair's come loose from its braid, and it makes a halo around her face inside her helmet. Her eyes are shadowed, her cheeks tear-stained. She doesn't speak. His smile softens, and just as if she had spoken, the two of them walk slowly toward each other, paces matched, gazes locked. He's the one to break the silence, voice a little hoarse from disuse, but gentle. "Hey, Highness." Her breath catches, and she stops two steps short of him, closing her eyes. Tears spill from beneath her lids anyway, tracking down her cheeks. The faceplate stops her from brushing them away. She's wound so tight, her body just shakes a fraction with each sob. Little tremors run in through her, hands curling to fists at her sides. He bridges the gap between them with two quick steps, wraps his arms around her, tucks her in against his chest. They stand there and he makes understanding noises while she occasionally sobs a word that's impossible to understand. And after a while, tears roll down his cheeks too. He's the one who breaks the silence again. "Fuck it, they'll just have to wait a few minutes to flush the place." "What?" She lifts her head to look at him, and he eases away so he can unfasten her helmet, the seals giving with a soft hiss. He lifts it away from her suit, leaning down to place it on the ground, without breaking eye contact. His brown eyes locked on her blue, both shining too bright. She holds still as he unfastens his own helmet and simply stands there for a moment, gazing at her with it dangling from one hand. He lifts his free hand to smooth back her hair, then swipes a thumb across her cheek to smudge away her tears. This time, she's the one to break the silence, her voice thick as she tries to master it. "Did you end up eating the raw bacon?" He's startled into laughter. "No." And then the laughter's gone as fast as it came. Something came up. He met Juggler in the bathroom and killed his first man. She sniffs. "Good," she says, sounding a little more like Commander Donnelly's daughter. "I have to draw the line somewhere." "What line?" He's confused, but good-natured. He likes that firmness coming back into her voice. In reply, she grabs the front of his suit and hauls him in, lifting her face in the same movement to claim a kiss, her mouth finding his without a beat of hesitation, her body fitting in against his, like it's the only place she's ever been. He drops his helmet with a crash and lifts both hands to cup her face, surging in against her. They hold tight to one another, locked together, lost. Eventually, they ease apart just enough to catch their breath, foreheads pressed together. He's still smoothing back her hair with one hand, running the other down along her jawline, dropping it to her shoulder, teaching himself her shape. She's still holding tight to the front of his suit. "I don't drink coffee," she says, breathless. "You can drink anything you like," he murmurs. "Just name it. I'll find it for you." "You said coffee," she replies, smiling. "Or dinner. I don't drink coffee, so it'll have to be dinner." He laughs again and wraps his arms around her, hugging her until she squeaks. She wriggles her arms free to wrap them around his neck. And though she's an orphan, and there's no way he leaves the House of Knives except feet first, and they're both bound to be dead before either of those things are a problem anyway, they just hold on to each other, like they're all the anchor the other one needs. Eventually, they ease apart once more, and this time, when their eyes meet, there's a new note there. Spines straighter, bodies surer. They can do together what they weren't sure they could do alone. She runs a hand down the front of his suit, smoothing out the wrinkles she left behind, and he stands still for her attentions. Then his eyes widen as a memory returns. "Got something for you, Highness." He digs inside his suit to produce something from an inner pocket, shielded by his hand. Then he shows her. It's a small bundle of jasmine, a little crushed and a little browned. "I thought you said you lost it." She takes it gently, holding it to her nose and inhaling with the kind of expression that folks everywhere hope to put on their girl's face. "Lost it? Are you kidding? Those things cost, they cost." "I said I lost my jumpsuit and you said you lost the corsage," she reminds him. He shrugs, still gazing at her as she holds the flowers between two fingers. "I guess I was a little distracted by the jumpsuit news." And now she joins him when he laughs. "Ready?" he continues quietly. "Let's shut it down," she says, tucking the jasmine inside her own suit close to her heart. "I never liked that thing anyway." They pick up their helmets and lean in by some unspoken agreement to brush their lips together one more time before they seal themselves in, smiling foolishly. "You always liked me," he points out, reaching for his usual cockiness but finding it gentler. It's her smile that does that. "What are you talking about? I still don't," she replies, trying for haughty and finding that's not on tap either. She pulls a small notebook from her outer pocket. "That the famous journal? Going to show me what's inside? Wouldn't you like to know?" "You know I would." "Stick around, you might find out." She tears the two pages of Grant's instructions from the journal, then tucks it back into her pocket once more. Okay, so first we need to bust open the maintenance cabinet. I have a list of tools here.
Countdown to Hypatia arrival at Heimdall Waypoint. 0 days, 4 hours, 58 minutes. Countdown to Kennedy Assault Fleet arrival at Jump Station Heimdall. 0 days, 3 hours, 26 minutes.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 0148.
It is a small one. The litter's runt, a mere meter long, thrust from the nest its siblings have carved below, a not rainbow scrawled across the aluminum behind it. Its four tongues flicker across the sense of the ventilation system's innards, and at last it tastes prey. Sensory receptors flooding with the vibrant tang of consciousness, drawing it away from the reactor's warmth and its greedy kin. Toward them, a strange pair. The orphaned princess and the brigand prince, side by side in an auxiliary control room, both of them worn thin and bruised black, hunched over systems they do not even pretend to comprehend. Dismantling them, one clumsy keystroke at a time, both clinging to the brink of exhaustion, sleep just an unhappy memory. They have bled and lost and cried and screamed. So much of what they were stripped back to gleaming bone. But then he glances up and finds her staring at him, her tired blue eyes ringed in shadows on his. And he winks. And that faded blue catches fire as her smile blooms bright. And blood and loss and tears and screams do not matter anymore, because at least they are together. Error. Ridiculous. No matter how hard she smiles, he isn't real. She cannot make him real. Error. The hunter lies coiled in a vent just a meter above her head. Confused now. It knows when prey is weak. And this prey should have succumbed to the poisoned bliss upon its skin long ago. Yet they do not stare at empty nothings, nor spit giggle babble through the drooling holes in their faces, as the other prey things did. And that frightens it. But it is oh so hungry. And finally, the boy prey takes a torn page of instructions from the girl prey's hand. With a parting bow, he shuffles into a tertiary control node a corridor away, leaving her alone. The girl prey straightens from her terminal, groaning as her back pops, shuffling to another console just below the hunter's hide. And it can wait no more. Metal teeth part before wriggling six-knuckled fingers, and it pries the grill apart as if it were gossamer. She looks up at the noise. This girl, this meal, this prey. Disbelief rippling on the surface of her eyes. And then she screams. It strikes, a biomechanical spring of muscle and sinew uncoiling, hitting hard enough to knock her off her feet. It does not understand her suit, only that it cannot touch her true skin until the false one is torn away. And so it wraps its length about her neck, pawing at the plasteel visor covering her face, hissing. She rolls about on the floor, momentary horror now replaced by muscle memory, punching and twisting, gouging and cursing. But this is no simulation on a virtual battlefield, nor even a human opponent with eyes to claw, throat to punch, vitals to stomp. She does not know this dance. The hunter's tail constricts about her throat, the metal collar buckling beneath its obscene strength, the slime on its rippling skin impossible to grip, and louder this time. She screams. Footsteps, pounding, shouting.
Hannah!
Nick!
He skids to his knees at her side, seizing two of its flailing necks, and, faces flushed with exertion, sweat and spit and prayers, centimeter by centimeter, they pry it loose. Its hateful shrieks, its rage, and its fear filling the air. Finally, with ragged gasps and a shouted curse, they tear it free and throw it hard into the bulkhead opposite, sending it tumbling to the floor. In a flash, it is coiled to spring again, all fingers and tongues and teeth. But his gun is in his hand, and with a single shot, sure and true and lightning quick, he paints its epitaph in black blood upon the wall. On his knees now, dropping the gun to hold her hand, eyes wide with fear behind the plasteel.
Hannah, are you okay?
And to his inquiry, she responds with her own, the one most appropriate to the situation at hand.
What the bleeding fuck was that?
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
Again, footage for this entire journal is a locked-off shot of Ella Malikova speaking directly to Cam. I'll splice in IM transcripts for the sake of continuity. The room is drenched in shadow, lit only by the monitors and Anansi's ambient green glow. Ella looks wired, tired, and all kinds of pleased with herself. I'd guess she's on her sixth or seventh Mount Rushmore.
Hey, Zo, me again. Why, you know right, you said you loved me. So, update. My ninja two-step worked sub-zero. I got a tight band wave out to the Hypatia. Should be hearing back from him any minute now. Got Nick and her ladyship hooked into the link too, just in case Mantis Girl ties me up on the retaliation. But so far, she's stone-cold snuck. You should have seen me stomp this rig, Fem. I was in and out of that comms array faster than you can say, bitch killed my goldfish. Mr. Biggles, too, sends his lerv, BTW. I read somewhere fish only got a 3-second memory span, so if I were to, just hypothetically, mind you, totally accidentally drop it...
An electronic alert.
I don't want your money, I just want your honey. I don't want a ring, I just want your...
Cuts across the audio. Ella frowns at her screen and begins typing.
Sec, Fem. It's my cousin IM. Pouchuk. Sup, cuz?
Nick M. You owe me 100-ish, bish.
Say what?
I bet you 100-ish this would all be balls up by November. It's still August. Pay up.
Cuz, WTF you talking about?
You ever get the feeling you forgot something real important?
Nope. I hear that happens to other people, though. Less brilliant people.
So you didn't forget what we were doing in auxiliary venting in storage room 3, then?
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit is right. One of the fuckers just jumped us in the reactor control room.
They got loose?
They hatched last night. Nobody there to put them in the humidicribs. Love potatoes are most definitely facing skyward. So you owe me 100-ish.
I never took that bet.
OMG, you welching on me at a time like this?
I'm not welching, I never took the bet.
You did so.
Fuck you, cuz. I told you looking this good wasn't free and said no bet, and I got the damn chat logs to prove it. Call me a welcher, I ought to punch those dimples out of your cheeks.
If that's the way you want to play it.
OMG, can we please focus on the problem at hand?
Fine, welcher.
Ah!
So yeah, if one of them is loose, chances are they all got loose. Guess they got hungry and found a way out of the AVS room.
Shit. And we just opened up every air vent in the station.
I think you mean you just opened up every air vent in the station. But yeah, fuckers could be anywhere by now.
Doing a quick squint through cams. Can't see anything slimy moving. But they're likely to move through the vents, so not like I could scope them anyway. Watch your back, cuz. They're probably going to stick close to the reactor. It's nice and toasty in there, and the little bastards hate the cold.
They're not too fond of bullets, either.
Be careful with the bang-bangs. Lickers are blind, remember? They attracted by two things, juicy brain meats and loud noise. So, if you and Blondie just stay quiet, you're safe as houses.
Hardy fucking har.
Thanks, I'll be here all night. Don't forget to tip your waitress. You two are suited up, right? Liquor toxin kicks off in CO2. You get a lungful of that, you'll be kissing the sky in a heartbeat.
We not idiots, cuz.
I mention this because hormones are greater than common sense. And the temptation for a little skin-on-skin might prove difficult to...
all right, Jesus, I get it.
All caps. Heart.
Hmm.
Oh, God.
I know. We nauseating, right?
No. Shit. Nick, you got trouble. BT Goon Squad just hit the hub floor of the reactor sector. Shit. 9 of them on cams. Inbound.
We not done f***ing the wormhole yet. Barely started.
They brought all their toys. Cuz, GTF out of there.
Which way they coming from?
All the ways. Shit. Their Decker's on me again.
Talk to me, cuz.
F***ing mantis trying to ruin my stunning good looks. Shit, there's two of them on my walls.
Ella spits a curse, spins in her chair. The computer behind her hums, a rumbling bass throb as she taps on her smart glass keyboards. Her eyes glaze over, a thin line of concentration appearing between her brows. The traces of worry, sorrow, fear, all of them smoothed over as she slips into the code, the network, the world where she doesn't need a pair of legs to run. She lets loose her defenses, the spider god at her back spewing a million glittering minions onto her data walls, defending their mistress's lair with swords and shields of ones and zeros. And over Ella's shoulder, in the dark recesses of the air vents above, something moves.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 0148.
Something moves, trembling and moist, licking the dark. Lost in her digital world, the girl does not notice. She is a strange one, small and frail, legs cadaverous with disuse, clinging to this life with naught but fingernails painted black and chewed to the quick. But in the code, the endless skein of ones and zeros, she leaves the pale atrophy of flesh far behind, strides like a goddess across a binary topography, the heart of a lion in her chest. She reminds me of Katie in some ways. And so, though I have reviewed this footage 100 times in as many seconds, this next part never fails to sadden me. Error. The hunter unfurls in the ventilation system above her. 1.5 meters long, bloated on the mind milk of Charlie Squad. The fiercest. The bravest. It has crawled through the reactor sector vents toward the prey it sensed beyond. But fearing the fate of those suffocated in their habitats, the prey have sealed themselves inside suits of rubber and plasteel. The venom on its skin has been robbed of its potency. It must be cautious choosing prey now, seeking the slow, the small, the frail, like her. I watch her through her camera lens, her now-forgotten video journal still recording. She is smiling, wide, dark eyes reflecting the war upon her screen. She is a queen on this battlefield of ones and zeros, and she is winning. But then, she hears it. The smallest hiss slipping over its tongues as it worms from the vent above her head. The O2 mask about her face keeps her safe from its psychotropic kiss. But what of its teeth, its fingers, its claws? Her eyes drift from the screen toward the noise, and she knows. Before she even lays eyes upon it, she knows. Hand dropping to the arm of her meta-chair. With a black curse, she draws out the pistol her father gifted her for her 15th birthday. The hunter strikes. Corded length uncoiling, shimmering with slime, falling onto her shoulders, black fingers reaching for her eyes. She shrieks, clawing it back, black tongues licking her cheeks. Boom! The camera blinded by the muzzle flash.
Motherfucker!
Boom! Shell casings spinning into the dark. The thing holds her tight.
F*** you!
Boom! Whispering. Its grip on her throat. Its blood on her face. She is a child on this battlefield of bone and flesh. And she is losing.
Nick!
The thing thrashes, and back she falls, out of her chair, O2 mask tearing loose, pistol in her hand bucking, boom, 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 shattering the computer behind her, the smart glass around her, the final shot striking the camera, putting out my eye, and turning all to hissing static.
Nick!
Footage ends. Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
This sequence is comped from cams all over the reactor area, beginning with a shot of a blood-spattered control room on Deck 13 and two blood-spattered teenagers. Malikov's looking grim, tapping on his palm pad and sparing the occasional glance for the girl slumped against a bank of auxiliary terminals. The Lanima that jumped her is dead, coiled in a puddle of tar black. Donnelly seems a little shaky, the throat of her envirosuit glistening with what looks like ropes of thick snot. Lank blonde hair is draped over her eyes, but she doesn't dare remove her helmet to brush it away. Malikov turns back to his palm pad, stabbing the glass with gauntleted fingers.
Nick M. Talk to me, cuz. Ella, you there? Where they at?
Malikov knows Falk's team is drawing closer every second they spend here. Problem is, he's got no idea which direction the squad is approaching from, and without his cousin to guide him further, he'll be running blind. But even with the sabotage on the reactor unfinished, standing still just isn't an option. Hannah, we can't stay here. BT goons are on their way. Which direction are they coming from? Ella's not responding. I think their decker is onto her, but we've got to jump now. Focus comes into Donnelly's eyes, and she drags her stare away from the dead thing smudged along the floor. Speaks to Malikov, groping for some kind of calm. Hold on. Just think for a second. If we head out blind, we could run right into them. And if we stay here, we're sitting ducks. Are there more? Donnelly glances at the slaughtered Lanima, the coiled muscle and countless teeth. Are there more of those things out there? Probably. The reactor's nice and warm. It's why Uncle Mike bred them in here. How many? Maybe 20? He shrugs as she shudders. But we can't stay here, Hannah. We could head back up to the hub through the vents. There's BT goons in the vents, Anyway, in this suit, I don't think I'd even fit in there. It'd be a squeeze. She looks him over. Does this slime still work when these things are dead? I doubt Fork's going to flush the station anymore, with everyone else suited up. Maybe you could risk taking it off. Still trying to get me out of my clothes, huh? Malakoff grins. I should probably have a shower first. Donnelly scoffs, snatches a headset off the terminal and throws it at him. Yeah, a cold one. Malakoff ducks, laughter dying on his lips as he focuses on the Lanimer's remains, lying in its slowly cooling puddle of black. His eyes lose focus, then grow wide, and I swear to God you see that f***ing light bulb go off over his head again. Cold shower. He runs to the corner, opens the satchel he took from Flipside's body in Bay 24, checking the contents again just to make sure. Rations, water, explosives, detonators. Looking around the room, he spies a map on the wall, a detailed schematic of the reactor area, outlining the designated exit route in the event of a fire. Ripping the map out of its bracket, he slings Flipside's satchel over his shoulder. Offers Donnelly his hand. Come on, I got an idea.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 0148.
They run, hand in hand, away from the hub, away from the Spec Ops squad, away from their only way out. Metallic stairwells spiraling away from the wormhole at the station's heart. Footsteps pounding staccato on the grillwork. They run down. Always down. Warmer there, you see. The boy in front. The brigand prince. His princess's kiss dried long ago upon his lips. Pausing at junctions to consult the map, crumpled in one hand. But he knows the way. For all his avoidance, deflection, denial, he is good at this. The rhythm, the chant, the killing song. It is in his blood.
Where are we going?
She asks.
Trust me.
He begs. And she does. I begin to fathom why. I see it in her eyes when she looks at him. The way she clutches his hand, like driftwood in a drowning sea. The only solid thing left in all her worlds, error. Or so she thinks. She does not see the dissonance yet. He pauses, breathless, at a stairwell door, speaks into his headset.
Chief Grant, you reading me?
I hear you, Nick. Are you two okay? What was that tremor a while back?
Warmest part of the reactor area is going to be directly under the heat exchangers, right?
Yes, down near the cooling towers, level 27. Why?
What temp is the coolant you pump from those towers?
It'd depend. Maybe negative 80 degrees Celsius?
Okay, thanks.
Nick, what?
Grabbing the girl's hand, he drags her into the downward spiral. The satchel full of explosives bouncing on his back.
Nick, where are we going?
Down, where it's warm.
The memory of black tongues shines in her eyes.
Won't those things be down there too?
Hope so.
They descend, gasping, sweating, out of the soft gravity at the station's hub, until finally, they burst from the stairwell and find it laid out before them. The last three stories of the reactor area, filled by a sprawling snarl of conduits, towering steel, gantries, walkways, pressure valves, all coated, dripping, glistening with spiraling patterns of uncolored slime. Emergency lighting paints the air red, hissing steam, clouds of vapor, a dark jungle of steel pipes and monoliths, cooling the reactor's fire and keeping this now broken circle spinning endlessly. Error. The boy squeezes his girl's hand.
Stay close, Highness.
The pair run to a massive nest of piping beneath Tower 6. Scanning the gloom, squinting through the seething wash of steam, the girl has her pistol in hand, flinching at shadows. The boy searches the pipes above, finding the one he seeks at last. A thin red serpent, studded with nozzles, crawling the tower's belly. And reaching into his suit's pocket, he draws out his cigarette lighter, holds it up to the sprinkler system, and sparks the flint. It takes a moment for the system to register the heat, for the valves to open. And at last, as the corrupted PA begins screaming, for the rain to fall.
Warning, warning, fire detected, level 27. Repeat, fire detected on level 27. All personnel report.
Jesus, this song.
He groans.
Somebody just shoot me.
The boy smacks his pistol against the piping, a hollow clang underscoring his shout.
Okay, come get it, f***ers.
The girl clutches his hand.
Nick, stop. Ella said those things are attracted to noise.
The boy pulls loose, smacks the pipe again and again, a gong singing in the hissing rain.
Nick, are you crazy? You might as well be ringing the f***ing dinner bell.
Yeah, and dinner's on its way.
The boy drops his satchel, drags out a small wad of Thermex 7 explosive, thumbs it and a radio stud onto the bulging coolant pipe above his head. He places another wad and stud behind them. And finally, he backs away, detonator in hand. The girl looks around them, realization dawning in her eyes, peering into the swirling clouds of spray and vapor. She sees the first of them, flickering tongues and wicked teeth gleaming in the downpour. A dozen more crawling across ceilings and floors toward them on long black fingers, drawn by the noise, the warmth, but above all, them. The boy puts his arms around her, pulls her close as she whispers,
"Are you sure you know what you're doing?"
He raises the detonator in his hand.
"I hope so,"
he says, and he presses the trigger.
Radio transmission, Baytech Audit Team, Secure Channel 112. Participants, Travis Cerberus Falk, Lieutenant, Team Commander, Fleur Callie Russo, Sergeant, Alpha Squad Leader, Abby Nightingale O'Neill, Corporal, Medic, Noxos Two-Time Antonio, Private, Communications, Marta Eden Alievi, Private, Logistics, Samuel Rapier Maginot, Infiltrator. Date 08-16-75. Timestamp 16:01 hours.
Audit team personnel, audit team personnel. This is Cerberus. Mantis reports a fire alarm down on reactor level 27, but no corresponding temperature spike. These rabbits have used the alarms to lead us on a merry dance before, so take no chances. They have no way out down there except back up through us. Callie, I want you and Alpha Squad with me. Main elevators. Nightingale, Eden, you stay at the ventilation junctions between 26 and 27. I want anything moving in those vents flatlined. Two-time, you and Rapier cover stairwells A and B. X anything that doesn't ID itself.
Cerberus, Callie. Roger that. Alpha Squad, good to go.
Copy, Cerberus. Nightingale and I got vents. Tight squeeze in here.
Said the vicar to the nun.
Christ's sakes, Abby. You want to get your head in the fucking game? Or keep cracking wise and lose your other eye?
Ladies, keep it civil or take it outside. Two-time, confirm receipt of order.
Cerberus, two-time. Copy that. Rapier, you got stairwell B. I got A. Acknowledge.
Two-time, this is Rapier. Stairwell B. Roger that.
Shoot to kill, my lovelies. Cerberus out.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 0148.
No incandescent boom. No shattering conflagration. The boy used barely a thimbleful of Thermex. But still, the explosive burns white hot at the smallest breath, melting two holes through the coolant pipes and spilling the liquid frost within. Arctic chill rips the air, turning sprinkler rain to briefest snow, and noontime warmth to boiling clouds of morning fog. The hunters recoil from the snap freeze, slicking the wet pipes and floors with dark, gleaming ice. They thrash and lick the air, hissing frustration. The alarm. The rain. The boy prey, now beating the pipes and shouting again. All this noise. The objects of their lust, hunger, rage too far into the bitter cold to reach, but auto shutoff systems quickly engage. The spray of coolant from beneath Tower 6 becomes a trickle, then nothing at all. The hunters know ice melts. Frost fails. Even snow dies. They need only wait for the reactor's warmth to overcome this fading winter, so they might swim in the warm hollows behind the prey thing's eyes. They need only wait to feed. But then, the elevator doors ping open. Corrupted sound waves adding to the alarm's cacophony as more prey things arrive. One of the newcomers, blonde, female, spies her targets first. The boy prey and the girl prey huddled beneath Tower 6 in a halo of melting ice. And she roars, raises her weapon, fires. Muzzles flash in the dark, bullets sparking off the metal beside the boy prey's head. The girl prey drags him behind cover as the grenades start to fly. The door to stairwell A bursts open, a hail of auto-fire spraying from the shadows. A tall one roars to the others as his weapon spits death. They fan out across the room, swift and surgical, the steps of this brutal ballet known by heart. The boy prey and the girl prey crouched behind a tangle of frozen piping, wincing and flinching, as the air explodes around them. The alarm, the song, the rain, the newcomers blasting away. All this noise. And in the midst of it all, the true hunters in this lair raise their many heads and teach the newcomers what it is to be prey.
Jesus! Christ!
Cujo, report.
Get it off me!
Contact, 9 o'clock. Cujo's down.
Lanima, I see him.
Get it off!
Multiple hostiles inbound.
I see him. Fire!
Get it off me!
Poacher, look out!
Kali, get back behind the line.
Fire in the hole!
Savage, on your stick.
Get some, mother...
Reloading. They're everywhere.
Over there. Tower 2.
Christ, how many f***ing things are there?
Two times. You got eyes on Donnelly?
Negative, Cerberus.
I'm clear.
Got your back, Sensei. Go!
Watch your crossfire, god damn it.
Negative.
Where the f*** are they?
To what, then? Sensei, you see him?
Roger that. I got eyes.
They're rabbiting.
Kali, get your ass back here. That's an order.
Oh, me.
Rapier, target inbound on your position.
Scratch 3, do ya?
Fleur, get back on the f***ing line.
Over there! Go!
Fleur, get back here!
They run, hand in hand, away from the ambush, away from the hunters, who for all their teeth and tongues did not expect to be met with quite so many bullets. The boy and girl seize their moment, scrambling to their feet amid the hail of burning fragmentation and screams, stumbling through the forest of pipes and steam toward escape. They see it gleaming in the dark, a distant stairwell that leads back up toward the hub and, in all the chaos and light and fury, appears unmanned. They dash toward it, boots pounding metal, running the maze of pipes and gantries, valves and intakes, so close to escape they can almost touch it. And out of the dark before them, he rises. The dot of his laser sight gleaming red between her eyes. The boy who promised her a whole sky of different stars. The traitor who tore her heart, still bleeding, from her chest. Error. And she spits it out, as if a mouthful of poison. A condemnation of all he did and all he is. The name that is not even his.
Jackson. Countdown to Hypatia arrival at Heimdall Waypoint. 0 days, 3 hours, 54 minutes. Countdown to Kennedy Assault Fleet arrival at Jump Station Heimdall. 0 days, 2 hours, 22 minutes.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 7213.
The trio hang motionless. The slaughter rings out behind them. Full auto fire and explosions. Shrieks of alien agony and human terror. But the three of them just hang still, as if time has no meaning at all. Donnelly's expression is pure hatred, mouth twisted in a snarl. Jackson. Malikov's pistol is in his hand. You can see him weighing the chances of getting a shot off, but first he needs to get that laser sight aimed somewhere other than between Donnelly's eyes. So he steps forward, spitting through clenched teeth. Merrick, you gutless f***ing trait. The rifle shifts to him like clockwork. Shut up, Malikov. This isn't about you. Donnelly steps in to block Rapier's shot. Don't point that thing at him. Don't you dare. Rapier blinks, breath catching as he realizes. Him? He whispers. You choose him? She stares defiantly, reaches back and finds Malikov's hand. What about us? Rapier asks. Us? She scoffs. Hannah, I'm sorry. I didn't want this to happen. I didn't know they planned any of this. I was just supposed to censor comms, make sure... Your apologies, she spits. People are dead because of you. There is no us. Do you understand? There's nothing between us. Nothing. There was. You cared about me. I know you did. And I still care about you. You care about me? She actually laughs. Says the guy pointing a gun at me? Anger darkens his face, voice rising. I'm just trying to explain. Don't you get it? I don't want your explanations. It's not about what you say, Jackson. It's what you do that matters here. He glances over her shoulder, toward the echoes of the battle around the cooling towers. The gunfire is sporadic now, sealed tactical armor and explosives and hollow points proving a match for hallucinogenic toxins and teeth. Blood is being spilled on both sides, the floors drenched with it. And over the sounds of the murder all around, he can hear heavy footsteps approaching at a sprint. Callie's voice hissing in his comset above the carnage. Rapier! Targets inbound, on your position! He blinks the sweat from his eyes as Falk roars down comms. Fleur! Get back on the f***ing line! Malakoff's muscles tense for a spring. Rapier! This is Callie. Do you have them? Fleur! Get. Back. Here. The boy named Rapier is staring at Donnelly, jaw clenched. You can see it in his eyes. How a simple job has spiraled so horribly out of control. How everything he's said and done, all the sweet smile and twists of the knife and lies, has led him right to this point. This moment. It's not about what you say, Jackson. It's what you do that matters here. He drums his fingers along his rifle's grip, opens his mouth to speak. To let them go? Order them to their knees? Either way, Rapier never gets the chance to talk. The darkness behind him uncoils in a long, glistening length. Rapier turns as it hits him, the Lanimer seizing his throat and wrapping around him with a hiss. It's a big one, almost a meter and a half. The kid goes down with a cry. Rifle shots ricocheting off the metal beside Donnelly's head. Malakoff yells, drags her aside as Rapier rolls about on the floor, clawing and punching at the thing atop him, its tongues lashing the visor over his face. Donnelly cries out, steps forward and seizes one flailing head, tries to drag it off. Despite everything, all he's done, the danger she's in, she's somehow compelled to help him. Malakoff's more concerned about the approaching boots, the squad of killers wading through the blood at their backs. His ambush, his trick with the coolant and the alarms, all of it, only bought them seconds, and those seconds are ticking away. And happy to let one of his Uncle Mike's babies avenge their daddy's murder, he grabs Donnelly's arm, drags her to the stairwell. Hannah, come on! She lingers another second. Staring at this boy who claimed to love her, rolling about in a knot of colliding colours and teeth. Hannah, come on! Malakoff drags Donnelly through the stairwell door, the sound of their feet pounding the stairs fading beneath the chattering gunfire and thundering grenade bursts. Rapier is still thrashing about on the deck, drawing his pistol, teeth gritted, fist choking one of the four flailing necks. He raises the weapon, another neck wrapping his pistol hand to the elbow, just as Callie rounds the corner, rifle up, blonde hair tangled across her eyes. She takes in the scene, takes a knee, takes careful aim, fires. A jawless head explodes in a spray of black blood. The thing choking Rapier hisses. Two more heads explode in quick succession, the last dropping limp and dead as Rapier curses. Flails, and with Callie's help, kicks his way free of the twitching corpse. Rapier, where are they? The kid clutches the dented collar of his suit, red-faced, great, ragged breaths hissing through his teeth, shakes his head. Callie clutches his arm, demands to know the direction Donnelly headed. The kid only croaks in response, but with a glance at the open stairwell door, the woman spits a curse and dashes away. Away from her remaining squad members, the battle, the bloodbath behind her. I guess she figures the rest of the Lanimer can wait. She has bigger kittens to kill. Those kittens are sprinting up the stairwell now, feet pounding metal up, up, up. Donnelly's fitter and doesn't smoke, so she's taken the lead, but Malakoff, gasping hard, is right on her tail. The pair drag themselves up out of the Earth's standard gravity at the station's periphery, their weight easing as they approach the hub. A glance down the spiral behind reveals Callie, 5 stories below and gaining. The woman's just a hate machine at this point, kind of frightening to watch her. Not an ounce of fat on her body, muscle and rage propelling her up the stairs 3 at a time. No energy wasted on threats or bullets blasted up the stairwell in the hope of a lucky shot. She knows she can outrun them. All she needs to do is keep them in sight, and sooner or later, the hunt is done. "Fuck me," Malakoff wheezes. "I gotta quit smoking." Donnelly smiles over her shoulder despite herself. "Chances of me making out with you again will probably improve if you do." Malakoff reaches into his Envirosuit's outer pocket as he runs, fishes out a crumpled packet of Tyrannosaurus Rex cigarettes and sends it sailing down the stairwell. "Fly free, little buddies. Talk less, run more. Where we going anyway? Hub, can jump the grav rail. Back to Alpha. Or the Ent Center. Maybe Ella can open some doors for us. If not, improvise. We didn't finish breaking the reactor." Malakoff coughs, lifts his visor to spit. "The assault fleet. The drones. Run now, worry later." So run they do, Callie gaining every step. They reach the boarding platforms for the grav rail on level 3. The system is a magnetic monorail, 2 trains of 4 cars each, constantly traversing the station's hub. The pair barrel out onto the platform, Malakoff bumping into Donnelly as she pulls up short. Of course there's no train waiting for them. The platform's totally empty. "Shit," Donnelly breathes. Malakoff leans back into the stairwell, draws his pistol. He catches movement 2 stories below, unloads 6 rounds. Callie presses back against the wall, out of sight. But he still empties the rest of his clip to buy them seconds. She dashes clear as he's reloading, coming into view again, 1 floor below. Malakoff blasts away again, and this time Callie returns fire with her burst rifle, pinpoint accuracy, even after a 24-story sprint. Shots ricochet around Malakoff's head, and the kid retreats with a curse. Crack shot he might be, but he's clearly outclassed. Callie's up and running again, without missing a beat, reloading as she comes. A train rounds the hub and decelerates into the station. "Go! Go!" Malakoff shouts. Donnelly runs, Malakoff right behind her, across the polished metal and corrugated rubber tiles, toward the gleaming serpent. "I'm dry! Toss me a mag!" Malakoff gasps. Donnelly fishes about her suit as she sprints, wrenching open the zipper at her breast pocket, and dragging out a clip of silverback ammo. And from the same pocket, her journal slips. The train hums to a stop. Its doors open soundlessly. The journal falls from Donnelly's pocket. Smooth brown leather cover, hand-pressed pages inside, fluttering open. Scrawled words and scribbled pictures and unspoken thoughts hitting the deck and bouncing to a stop a meter or so along the platform. Donnelly reaches the grav train car, stops just inside the doorway, holds out her hand to Malakoff. "Come on!" Callie emerges from stairwell B, rifle in hand. Malakoff's eyes are locked on the fallen journal. It'd be stupid to stop for it, and he knows it. It's just a thing, an object. Nothing more. But then he spies the page it's fallen open on. The inscription written there, clear as starlight. "Your loving father, Charles Donnelly." And he realizes it's just like she said. It's all she has left of him. "Nick, come on!" The kid skids to a stop. Callie drops to one knee. Malakoff scoops the journal up from the floor, stuffs it into his suit's breast pocket. Callie raises her rifle. "Nick!" Callie fires. The first shot catches the kid in his hip, second in his gut, the third in his chest.